inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Dakota, I'm really excited to hear your story. 7 years ago, you didn't know anything about real estate, and for work, you were delivering pizza.
Yeah, that's right. I was actually working for Domino's. I delivered pizza in a college town. It was a cool job. I made $2.13 an hour plus tips. And, you know, in 2015, I started transitioning out of that, and I bought my first rental property and kind of haven't looked back since.
And over the last 7 years, Dakota turned that one rental property into a portfolio of rental properties, and that portfolio has literally made him millions of dollars. And on the show today, we're going to figure out how he did it, how a Domino's delivery guy became a multimillionaire through rental properties. Joining us on the show today from Pocatello, Idaho, is Dakota Worrell. We'll take a really quick break to thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll talk to Dakota. It's a lot of work to find a really good rental property. And when you actually find that property, you want to make sure you're working with a lender that can get that loan closed. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and her specialty is helping investors finance rental properties. She has a ton of loan programs, and she can find something customized to you for your situation. If you want to find out more or you're ready to get started today, just go to RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, LendingGroup.com, NMLS 42056.
Rental Income Podcast.
How did you buy that first property not making very much money?
Yeah, so after when you're making, you know, income that's mostly reliant on your tips, after about 2 years, if you can show consistent income, banks can actually start to use some of that income and they can average it out. And so what happened is, you know, 2015, it was still actually a buyer's market, but that's kind of when things started to go crazy. I was actually able to get a grant from my city. They were offering a grant for 3% of the 3.5% down payment that you needed for an owner-occupied FHA loan if your income was below 80% of what the median was. So I think in my area, that was $36,000 a year. So, you know, if I was making, I don't know, call it, you know, $28,000 or less, I could qualify, which I was. So I was actually able to buy my first house for $419 out of my pocket after that grant.
Wow.
Which was great because, you know, I think that's about what I had.
Right,
I mean, I had
right.
Maybe $1,200 saved.
Now, was this a rental property or was this a house that you were buying to live in?
So it was actually a house, but what was interesting about this property is that it had a walkout basement. And in that basement had its own kind of living area, a bedroom, a washer dryer room, and a bathroom. So what I actually did was I split that off from the rest of the house, and I plumbed a small kitchenette into the washer dryer hookups, you know, that just had a 110 volt burner plate and a mini fridge and a sink. And I actually turned that basement into its own apartment. And I lived there, and what was awesome is the upstairs was a 3-bedroom apartment. So my mortgage ended up being $102 a month on that property. And I was able to rent that upstairs apartment out for $850 a month. So I went from paying rent every month to actually getting paid $48, you know, and change every month to live there, which was huge for me because, yeah. You know, on top of not paying rent, that meant that I could buy 2 Little Caesars pizzas every week and then three right. on a bad week, right?
Right, right. Wait, so tell me again, how much was the mortgage payment?
It was $802 a month.
$802, and you were renting it for $850.
That's correct.
And you know, that was a really smart move to move into the basement because I assume you could rent the upstairs for more than you could have rented the basement.
That's right. Yeah. Basement apartments are always a little bit more or less desirable. Plus, you know, the upstairs was 3 bedrooms and a lot nicer. But at that stage of our career where we're just getting started, we don't need nice, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need
right.
income.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was a really smart move. So you're making $48 a month, plus you got the mortgage pay down, you've got the potential for appreciation, and, you know, the big thing is you're not paying rent. I mean, you're basically house hacking there. So, like, did you feel, or did your friends or family or, like, other people in your life, did they think that you were crazy to make such a big investment when you weren't making very much?
No, I mean, I think that most of the people in my life were pretty supportive, actually. And I think the attitude for me and for them is, you know, when you're making $2.13 an hour, quite the contrary, it doesn't really seem like you have anything to lose, right?
That's true. That's
I mean,
true.
I didn't have kids. I didn't have a lot of debt, thankfully. So I think it was a risk I was happy to take. But, you know, it was actually my father who pointed me in the direction of real estate back in 2015. He was kind of telling me, you know, I think this looks like kind of a good time for people in your age group to think about start entering the market. And, mm-hmm. and that's what kind of made me start looking at it. I mean, there were some people who were telling me, you know, lost a lot of money in the last downturn and were telling me, hey, you know, maybe you don't want to put all your eggs in that basket. And I was like, well, you know, I kind of only have one egg.
So. Right. Yeah. It's a good thing you didn't listen to them. So, all right. So that property worked out. You were living there very cheaply. And then did that kind of give you the real estate bug? Like, hey, this is working. Let me figure out how to do this again.
Yeah, it did. So there's a couple things that happen. Like 4 months after that, maybe it was a little longer, maybe it was 6 months. At some point, we ended up paying to have a general appraisal of the property done. And we had bought that property for $130,000, and the appraisal came back at $200,000.
Nice.
So we had just found out that in less than a span of a year, I had made, you know, $70,000 in equity. And a big part of that was creating the mother-in-law apartment that I was living in, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of that was just the markets going crazy. And basically, I had just made, you know, 6 years of my wage as a delivery boy in the form of appreciation. And I kind of realized that this was the only thing in my life that I had done to date where after I expend all of this effort, you know, to produce money, it kept paying me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, the rent check just kept coming. Like at some point I finally realized, hey, this is real. It's not a scam. It's going to keep paying me. And when I realized that virtually everything else I had done, I worked for it and it produced a one-time result and then I spent it and I was no further ahead. That's kind of when I realized that the only thing that I wanted to do from then on out was something that was going to continue to pay me after the work was done.
Right. Yeah. And you know, what's great about that is you made all this money in appreciation, and appreciation is real. I mean, like, real estate generally appreciates over time, and you hit it right. And I think that, you know, some of the naysayers might say, oh, you got lucky, but I mean, there was no guarantee. You didn't buy this property for appreciation. It just kind of happened, right?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There certainly is an aspect of luck to doing business, and most of it is timing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you might get lucky once, you might get lucky twice, but it's really what you do with that luck that counts.
Right.
If you keep turning it, you start, you know, becoming less lucky and start becoming more skilled.
Right. Okay, so you've got that $70,000. So what do you do with it? How did you tap into that money?
So rates were, I don't know, 4% around that time. And what I actually did was when I got that general appraisal, I paid a little bit extra to have it transferred to my banking institution. And I actually went and applied for a cash out refinance. And they were able to give me about $40,000 of that $70,000.
Okay. So you've got the first property still, you've got $40,000. And then what do you do with that $40,000?
I took that $40,000 and I had found a triplex not far from my first property for $154,000. And I went and I put, you know, 25% of that was, you know, around $44,000. So I went and put that money down on that property, and I worked to do it again.
And did you have any trouble getting loans? Because I know, you know, like you said earlier, you've got that the history of getting paid on tips, but now you're getting a bigger loan, and it didn't sound like it was that much more time after you got the first loan. Did you have any trouble getting that cash out refi?
Every loan in that first 2 or 3 years of my career was pretty difficult to get. And we were always able to find, you know, some creative way. Like, I think when I pulled that $40,000 out, I actually had to raise rents in my upstairs.
Okay.
So I think I took it from $850. I spent like $900 on fencing materials and fenced in the yard myself and got the tenants upstairs, you know, in exchange for that, because they had some dogs, to agree to raise their rent from $850 to $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's actually what helped me get that cash out refinance. Because they were, you know, essentially able to count that rent towards my income.
Right.
I was able to get loans to buy that triplex. After that triplex, I got a little bit cocky and I actually ended up leaving my job because I wanted to focus on real estate full time. And, you know, for basically the next 3 years, I wasn't able to get loans at all. And I hadn't even actually considered that as a consequence of my actions.
Yeah. Yeah. That W-2 employment really is so important. So how are you financing properties from that point out?
So what I started to do is, obviously, I was attending all the local RIAs, and I was learning about things. And one of my mentors kind of mentioned something called seller financing in passing. And so in 2016, all I did full time is write offers on everything on the MLS, everything that wasn't on the MLS, you know, driving for dollars and trying to get somebody to carry the financing on it. And for that entire year, I must have written, you know, 40 plus offers and didn't get a single one accepted.
Wow.
I started knocking doors, and that was kind of my bottom point. Like, everybody had been telling me to go knock doors, and I just didn't want to do it because, you know, it's hard work, it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I kind of didn't want to do it, and I went and knocked doors. And my very first day knocking doors, I found this ran down triplex. A tenant answered the door. I talked to him for 30 minutes. They gave me their landlord's number, made an introduction to me to the property owner. And they actually agreed to seller finance that triplex to me. And what was even more interesting is, instead of a down payment, they actually paid $2,000 to cover my closing costs and everything else. So I was able to seller finance that very first property with almost nothing out of pocket.
You know, what's great about that, I think that's a really good lesson, is that sometimes when you can just get in front of somebody, it's so much easier to sell your idea, to sell that you want to buy this property. Where when you were just making offers the year before, it's just a blind offer. They don't know you. But like, when you can actually, when the person you're talking to actually sees you're a real person, you can make that connection with them. It's so much easier to sell the idea that you want to buy their property. Did you find that to be the case?
100%.
Yeah.
I was focusing a lot on the numbers with seller financing. So when I would talk to them, I would say, you know, this is the interest rate and we're going to do the amortization this way, and here's the term and the down payment and here's the tax benefits. And what I realized is, in that asset class, people really don't focus on the numbers. And if they feel like you know more than they do and you're talking down to them, you know, whether that's true or not, the walls go up.
Mm-hmm.
When people don't know the answer is just no, right?
Right, totally.
So instead of talking in legalese or fancy business terms, what I started doing is, you know, the conversation would be like, hey, you know, so what's going on in your life? Oh, you know, my daughter just got accepted into college, you know. Oh, wow, that's amazing. So she had great GPA. Yeah. How much does a couple, semesters worth of tuition go there? Oh, 12 grand. All right. So, you know, maybe if we were actually able to get you 12 grand up front, you know, that might work. right? Like having a conversation as people and figuring out, you know, oh, you know, would $1,400 a month, would that be helpful to you? You know, I didn't need to tackle the interest rate and the amortization with them. I could figure out what they needed and then go do my numbers at home to make that work
for them. Right. Yeah. I mean, you're solving their problem. You know, you're finding their problem and solving it. And that is the key to getting a property. So then was this what you did then to build out your portfolio over the next few years? Were you doing just a lot of approaching sellers and trying to work out a deal with them?
Yeah. As soon as I realized, as soon as I had that eureka moment that seller financing in real estate was not about numbers, it was about people, I blew up. So I had that drought year where I got myself into a little bit of debt. I didn't get any deals done. That next year, you know, in January, I bought that triplex on seller financing and I sold it and was able to make it. I sold it 4 months later and was able to make $90,000 on it.
Wow. It's incredible. Wow.
Well, yeah, you know, God bless America.
Yeah.
But what it really did is previous to this, you know, I'm trying to convince people to sell or finance for, you know, like $5,000 or less.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a really hard sell. I mean, when you're going to say, hey, would you carry a note on this? And I've got, you know, 15% down, 20% down, that's substantial. Mm-hmm. And so I just started to roll with it. Now that I finally had some cash, I was getting, I don't know, I bought 7 properties that year on seller financing, I think, all rolling that same $90,000 forward.
All right. And then flash forward to where you were a few months ago, how many properties did you, or how many units did you get up to?
So I've probably thus far in my career owned over 200 doors, solely owned. Right now I've got 131 units, centered in 8 properties, and yeah, I mean, getting into real estate was probably the best decision I've ever made in my professional career.
Now, right now you are in the process of selling your portfolio and cashing out, and you've seen a ton of appreciation. How much money are you going to make selling off all your rentals?
So when I started this journey, I, you know, got a grant for being poor, essentially. And I started this career with $419 and essentially lived off my cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned that $419 and all the cash flow that produced into, I think when I sell this, we're going to net $5 million.
Wow. And over 7 years, you went from $419 to millions of dollars. That is absolutely,
and literally just recycling that same money.
That is absolutely incredible.
This was my only job. It was my only source of income this entire time, right? Which means every dollar that I ever had to reinvest in another property, it came from that same money.
Right.
And I think that's the part that people don't value enough is I didn't bring any extra money in on this journey. It was all cash out refinance, 1031 exchanges, trading up, you know. So $419 turned into one way or another $5 million over the course of 7 years. And I just don't know any other industry that you can really do that in.
Yeah, I don't think there is one. I really don't. And so to create that kind of wealth, were you investing into the properties and fixing them up, or was a lot of this just the market appreciating?
You know, it was definitely both. I don't actually know that I believe in easing money. I've never seen it. You know, real estate wasn't passive for me. You know, in 7 years, I haven't really taken a day off. Mm-hmm. There has been always something to do at the properties. And so every single one of those properties I bought was ran down, distressed, or dilapidated. Still to this day, I've not bought a turnkey property. And I spent a lot of my time, you know, I hired employees, it's true, but then I worked with those employees every day fixing those properties. I eventually created my own property management company to manage those properties. You know, everything came down to keeping expenses down and doing better work. And I think the rising market allowed me to capitalize on a lot of those opportunities. And so it was both. There was a lot of work, you know, every day for 7 years that went into those properties. But at the end of the day, what allowed me to do it so quickly was the market raising alongside me quickly enough that I could recapitalize consistently over, you know, the last 7 years.
What an incredible story. I love hearing success stories like this. It's really incredible how someone can start with nothing and build up such a portfolio that really just changes their entire life. I know for me personally, I've always said I'm never going to sell, but I think I would have a hard time turning down $5 million in profit. Well, Dakota, well done. If anybody wants to reach out to Dakota, I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode369. If Dakota inspired you, and I don't see how he couldn't have, and you want to buy your first rental property or you want to add to your portfolio, the lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and her specialty is helping investors finance rental properties. She has a ton of loan programs, including her no-doc loan, where she doesn't need pay stubs, bank statements, or tax returns. She just wants to see that you have a good deal, and if you do, she'll give you a 30-year fixed-rate loan. Now, the rates are going to be a little bit higher than a traditional full-doc loan, but it's still a great deal. If you want to reach out to Chaley, just track her down at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com, NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast today. Make sure you follow the show. We put out new interviews every single Tuesday. And if you're following the show, you'll get notified as soon as new episodes come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.